Welcome to Empower Your Life with Enneagram with Dr. David Daniels, the program that will develop your own self-awareness and strengthen relationships with all those around you. Now, enlightening you with Enneagram, here's Dr. David Daniels.
I want to welcome you all back to the Voice America show on the Enneagram, bringing the Enneagram into the world. And remind you that the full introduction to the Enneagram is on the original session, the first session, which is archived on Voice America that you can refer back to. Now, just briefly, the Enneagram is from the Greek word ennea, which means nine. It means like a figure of nine. And I always say that Pentagon had nine sides instead of five sides. Everybody in America at least would know what an Enneagram was, because they know what the Enneagon was rather than the Pentagon. So it means nine personality styles. This is about a personality understanding that's based upon the core motivations that we have and how then that affects our driving energy and the way we organize attention. All of us filter the world. We have perceptual filters that limit the way we experience the world. We don't realize this. So the Enneagram is a system to come to understand basic motivation, which gives us much power for change, and to understand how we organize our attention. Through doing this, we also come to appreciate very much different styles of attention in the world, different habits of mind. And we teach from what's called the narrative tradition. It means the type speaking for themselves. And we believe firmly that it's an inside job. It's from the inside out. You have to understand yourself from the inside out, and we don't type people from the outside. You might want to take the Essential Enneagram Paragraph Test on AuthenticEnneagram.com, because it will take you through the process of self-discovery, which is the first biggest step for all of us in self-development. So I want to review now for you. We're moving from the head center of intelligence. Remember, there's these three intelligences that we all have: a mental intelligence, which gets emphasized in our Western culture, a heart-centered intelligence that tells us all about relationships, how we connect to people, what kind of image we have, how we get approval, love, and recognition. And we're going to be starting with type three, what we call the performer in this triad of the heart energy type. And remember, the third type are the instinctual or gut energy type, the body energy, and we will get to those in later programs. So it means that we all have all three of these intelligences, but the heart types, heart type centered people, tend to lead with their connection energy, their energy about relationship and their energy about image and how they connect to the world and get approval and love. And we all have three basic needs: the need for approval and love, the need for a sense of worthiness in the world, and a need for safety, security, and a satisfying life. So I'm going to move now to type three. I want to welcome our panel of Tony, Louise, and Rosie. And I'm going to review the sort of the basic proposition, we call the basic structure of the type 3, and then explore all this with our panel. The original quality, essential quality, called hope, holy hope, meaning that things really get done according to universal laws. This particular quality is affected. It goes into the background. And it goes into the background because this child perceives, given whatever it comes into the world with, that the world rewards doing, not being. So consequently, this child comes to believe that you gain love, approval, and recognition through what you succeed at, what you accomplish, what you do in the world. And you want to do this with a good image that will gain you this love and approval and recognition. That's the deal. So naturally, the energy that drives this, it's called self-deception, because you can't just be true to your own real feelings. You have to have this kind of go-ahead energy of accomplishment to get things done, to be out there in the world and accomplish. And at the same time, attention naturally gets narrowed and focused in on tasks, goals, things to accomplish. Kind of polyphasic, all of them lining up. Always something to do and accomplish. And very active, go-getter kind of energy drives this attentional stance. And the worst thing that happened to you would be that somehow or other you'd be this awful failure, and or you would be incapacitated and couldn't accomplish anything, because then the type believes, well, I wouldn't be loved. I wouldn't get any recognition. I wouldn't get approval. So you want to keep driving forward towards success, which you believe is what's going to gain that for you. And ultimately, of course, the goal is to realize that love truly comes from being much more than it does from doing. And that's part of the task. So I'd like to turn to all of you and ask you, given this basic proposition or your own stance about things, how do you know you're a three, and what would you say about this? Louise, would you start?
Well, I know that I'm a three because of this go-ahead kind of energy that has always been with me since I can really recall and can sort of trace back to the way that it's also been shaped in my life. I also, the basic proposition when I read about it from the Enneagram about how hope that everything in universal principles then gets lost was so significant to me because I place so much hope on a daily basis in my own effort. And thus, I put tremendous amount of energy into my own effort, believing that I will win my way into the hearts of others. I will win my way into the most wonderful, beautiful marriage. I will win my way into heaven with all of that kind of effort.
Right. You'll get love and approval through what you do and accomplish, mm-hmm. and it's your hope, not the universal hope that's going to do this. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. Tony or Louise? Or Rosie, I'm sorry.
I think how I know I'm a three is what I have been described as having frenetic energy. And that energy plays out in being able to multitask in a way that is pretty incredible, I would have to say. Others feel overwhelmed by it, however, how many balls I can have juggling in the air at any one given time. And so the approachability side suffers because people think they can't measure up to all the balls that I have juggling in the air at once. So there's a sense of awe by others, but mm-hmm. also this distance that it creates at the same time. But it is all about doing, and having all these things going at one time forces me to focus outward and not inward.
Right, and it's like you're so much moving ahead and so turned toward accomplishment that other people can kind of be left in their tracks.
Yes, if they can't keep up, then I just leave them in the dust.
Right.
Yeah. Our daughter's a three, and I mean, like, trying to keep up with her is like quite an ordeal. You know, she's always out there ahead with the next task, the next thing to accomplish, the next achievement.
And if there's a free moment, then if someone approaches, you'll feel it just in an absolute heartbeat because you feel like, hey, I have this talent and energy. It needs to focus somewhere.
Right.
But it is never about self.
Right. And that's where you get, you believe from your particular standpoint that you gain love and approval mm-hmm. and recognition in the world.
Yeah, very much so.
Right. Mm-hmm. Tony, how about yourself?
Yeah, interesting. Up into a few years ago, I used to have my nice to-do list, and my to-do list wasn't just 5 things or 10 things. It was usually in the 70s or the 80s, and all these things had to be done.
Just the 70s or 80s?
Unfortunately, I've gone back to it. It's still around. And there was that sense of needing to go through that list on a daily basis and check off things and know that, all right, I've gotten 1 through 10 done. And that there was that sense of self-worth, that sense of accomplishment, that sense of, okay, this feels better now, and my day has been okay because I've just done this or accomplished this and been focused on this. But what's tomorrow? You know, what am I going to be focusing on tomorrow?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, Louise?
No, I was just going to, I really resonate with that, and I think Rosie did too, that list making. Now, lots of types make lists, but for me, it really captures the tension that Rosie mentioned earlier about the doing and then also needing a connection with other people, when we can also appear that we are so together that we don't need that kind of connection. Mm-hmm. And so the to-do list begins to even have on it such things as, you know, call mom, spend time talking to third son about blank blank, you know, go to lunch with, take, you know, remember to get a haircut, you know, because I would totally forget all these types of things. So it's a real, it's attention constantly, and so the to-do
right.
list.
Remember to spend a few minutes with my husband.
Right, exactly. Remember, I have on my to-do list, you know, go to daily mass. It's like in my to-do list as opposed to just something I should be doing out of almost freedom.
And what do you feel from inside out drives this? What's the motivating force of the to-do list accomplishment?
Well, there's incredible immediate feedback internally and externally. The external part is when I, at least, am in motion and am doing. I do things really well, and there's an incredible competence that feeds the ego in that sense, where it then fuels actually more energy. But internally, in terms of my own spiritual development, it's sort of a path of I'm moving in the direction, and I have these tangible kinds of things that are bettering me, bettering other people. It's very aligned with my value structure, the things that I would want to do, like with my children and my husband and in my work. And so it feeds both. But it's really, there's a deceitful aspect to it that you mentioned, which is the thinking then that I could do all those things, and that because I do all those things, then I will be loved, and that God will love me too.
Right, and it's like it's a self-deception about what your own true feelings may be, or the range of your true feelings at least, that aren't allowed because if you have too many feelings, it gets in the way of getting things done.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot of feelings, actually. They're very easily accessible to me, the whole range. But I do not. I mean, I just don't stay with them long enough because they get in the way of doing all these other things.
Right. Love and reward is going to come from the accomplishments. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Rosie, it can also be a sense of appreciation from external folks. In that instance, feed ego, or at least some satisfaction from within. Whereas if you just do things for self or those close by to you, very often you don't get those same feelings of appreciation. They may be there, but you don't hear them or see them. So I think there's something about this outside sense of appreciation that in essence fuels that chronic activity.
Right. It's not like there's an inner sense of appreciation just for who you are.
No.
It has to come from the outside. And, of course, this is all fueled in our American culture, which is largely a three-based or performer-based, you know, like just go do it, get accomplished, be successful, be achievement, get ahead. You know, it fuels that, and the recognition that you get and the praise you get for that can be very powerful in, you know, feeding this three energy. Mm-hmm. How do you think you became this particular type? What kind of influences in your childhood were there?
I think one of the things for me as a younger person, especially within our own, you know, with our culture as well, a younger man, I think I feel that pressure of having to accomplish to succeed. And one of the ways that I've been fortunate enough to deal with this, with both the gift side and the shadow side, is through athletics. You know, mm-hmm. For the last 15, 17 years or so. And interesting enough, all the way through my athletic career, especially towards the end, I would the Nike sign, "Just do it." It was actually right over my bed, especially in college. And it was the idea that every week I had this opportunity of practicing throughout the week to make sure that whatever I was going to put out there on that field on Saturday was the best, and it was going to be efficient. It was going to be as good as it could be, and that hopefully that reward was going to be there. The reward from the crowd, the reward from the team, the reward from the coaches. But in the end, there are very positive parts of that, but what was going on inside, you know, in terms of what were those needs, those feelings that may not have been able to be looked at because the goal needed to be accomplished, and the goal to win, but there's other parts of that too.
Right, to compete and win is very important, to do it efficiently and effectively, and then all the recognition comes from that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So what about in your instance, Louise? What in your childhood?
I might put a different lens on it in terms of the external affirmation because for me, as I've thought about this over the years and with studying the Enneagram, it's very clear where it started. My father was killed tragically in an airplane crash when I was about 3 and a half. And I can recall over many, many years, my mom always saying, your dad's proud of you. He's watching you. He's with you all the time. And so the doing absolutely was related to that kind of affirmation. It something that
brings up feelings too.
Oh, loads, and also where I didn't identify with being a three for a long time because threes were also known to be disturbed to cut corners, and I've just walked with my external affirmation with me as a spirit, so I was never cutting corners because there was always somebody looking, even when I was alone.
Well, you know, what I want to emphasize is that it's not about being a liar. It's not about deceit. It's about, at times, a self-deception that doesn't allow you the full range of your feelings to be just present and receptive to them. It constricts them some because you've got to get the job done. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what's meant by the self-deception.
Mm-hmm. And have to do it really well. Yeah, be the best.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you had this influence of, like, your mother reminding you that your your father was looking down upon you and smiling down upon you,
and
it kind of energized your life.
Yes, it did.
Right. Rosie, how about your background?
I would say for me, one of the things that I reflect back on is being the second of four girls, pretty closely spaced. It was about getting noticed. And getting noticed in our family was around academics, around doing something good that you actually got the limelight put on you. So I think after a while I figured I can either be a wallflower as sort of a middle child, or I can excel in the doing side, the academic side, sometimes the creative side, because then I got sole attention of mom or dad or both over the good things that I had done.
Right, and that made you feel what?
It made me feel good, appreciated, noticed. Mm-hmm. And so maybe I need to just keep doing a whole bunch of this so I continue to be noticed.
Keep on doing it. Mm-hmm. So I want to know how your type affects relationships. What blessings does it bring? What are the gifts that you bring to relationships? And also, what is it that's challenging about being in relationship with a three? Or a performer.
Well, the blessings are easy, probably, for us to come up with.
We can tell you all
the kinds of great things.
Okay, well, let's hear the blessings.
Well, the ability to balance so many things and juggle so many things in a household, in a career, in relationships. Obligations. We're beautiful with obligations because there's external demands around those obligations. Of course, you can just see right through that as to what the challenges are. Very often, the most important things get subordinated to those external demands. And often, especially in my early days of being married, I would hear that all the attention and energy is driven to tasks. I didn't understand what that meant at the time. Washing clothes was more important than sitting and being, and in my mind it was at that time. But it came at a huge sacrifice, really, to the development of the relationship.
Right. So that let's say in the relationship, the person, the vital person, whether it was the partner or children, you maybe just wanted to have you there, just be there and be present and understand their feelings and play with them.
And for me, it was, I couldn't even understand that somebody would want to be with me. I thought someone would want to do with me, and that the mere doing was an act of love. Mm-hmm. Yet, in fact, it wasn't interpreted that way at all. Right. It was interpreted as an obligation being met.
Mm-hmm. Which is a great example of different of us have different habits of mind, and so we don't see the world in the same way.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that. Mm-hmm. Louise, what about the
Well, in my dearest relationship, which is my marriage, Echo Rosie and... We have five children, and so the grace of being able to not just juggle it, but to really do it gracefully, the scheduling and the, you know, five or six athletic games on a weekend, not to mention the birthday parties and the practices and the school homework and the tests and the projects and work full time.
I'm getting exhausted just listening to you.
And it really is quite, it works. Now, the
the part that is difficult, besides the fact that if my husband were not so dear, I may have just worn him out. But instead, he knows that it's the act of organizing and the doing for my family that is my show of love back to my children. And he will really highlight that as almost my champion for them, which has been enormously just an incredible gift. The conflicts, though, that it can bring are that I can totally unwittingly have removed myself emotionally from my family. I don't look in their eyes like I have. Everything's hunky-dory. But frankly, I'm really much more focused on getting my article written and getting this agreement drafted and what I'm thinking about doing with these difficult folks with whom I'm working, et cetera. And that's really cheating us all of depth of relationship.
I want to comment that what you just said, that recognition, that awareness requires quite a bit of self-observation. Mm-hmm. And this is the whole path for all of us, is to be able to become better self-observers so we can really appreciate our strengths and come to work with and deal with the challenges or the liabilities. So I appreciate that, you know, that is the difficulty in the relationship with the three, is like, where am I really? Just how I feel, and how do you feel?
At any given time. And what the Enneagram has really brought for me, and as I continue my journey with it, is the awareness of the kind of anger or, you know, name the emotion, but what comes up when someone gets in my way innocuously of my then what I had planned to do with regard to task and work, and with the self-awareness now to kind of breathe in about it and to totally change my frame, which was out of, like, how dare you, is how I'm feeling on the inside. Even a telephone call from a dear friend.
Right.
Is that crazy or
right?
What?
Well, we'll come back to that. We'll come back to the thing that, what kind of thing sets you off or gets you into personal reactivity. I want to mark that out and really come back to it in just a moment. But, Tony, how about in relationship? What are the strengths and what do you bring to it, and what's challenging to others?
Yeah, I would agree with Louise and Rosie. I think especially the juggling, you know, juggling certain friendships that are themselves very unique and different. And with that juggling, though, there's a certain sense of intensity that I think I bring to those relationships, I bring to those friendships. And the shadow side, the side of that, though, is a certain expectation that I often have that, well, how come they're not, I expect them to share their feelings first, because as it's, I'm all, you know, I'm doing, you know, and that the being part is very hard, and especially being in touch with what's going on inside and how am I feeling about this, and being the person to actually be the first person to share that, or be the first person to open up, or to begin that part of a friendship or relationship is difficult at times. That might be the challenge that I think I would bring as a three, because of the whole lack of what am I feeling inside in certain friendships or relationships.
When you do, all of you, in this work of personal development, and your awakening comes and you start to realize how much energy and focus goes into tasks and goals, and you start to slow down, what sort of feelings come up? And does sadness come up?
Definitely. Well, there's a range again of feelings that come up. You know, if I can have a weekend where we don't have an agenda or where there's not that many games, and I have said I'm not going to work and sort of huddle myself away at night in my office, the kinds of feelings that come up are ones of just incredible joy of the beauty of my, you know, my six-year-old and the special drawing that he showed me, that he did for me, that he showed me one every day for the past 2 years. But I took time to actually ask what he meant with the colors he was using, that kind of experience. The sadness, though, I have experienced sadness, and it has usually come when I've been slowing down for more than just a few hours or a couple days, and like maternity leave, where there's so much joy around a new baby, but the sadness of the choices that I've also made that relate to my work and what I now see as ministry to others in the world, when I also have a family and I could be home.
When you haven't spent enough time just being as you are when you're with an infant,
yeah.
That's all you can do. It's just sort of be there.
Yes, and it's an incredible paradoxical feeling. Or even now, if I come home from work early, which I try to do, and my babysitter's there, you know, God love her. But something will come up, and I realize that just my being there to interface totally changed the situation. And I think, gosh, if I were there all the time. So there's real sadness there.
Uh-huh. Right. Thank you. Rosie?
David, it's almost like a melancholy is what comes up for me when I take the time for myself. There's a side that wants that, but then when I get that, I'm wistful for being busy. Last year I came out of life after 16 years to start some of my own private consulting. So there's periods of frenetic work and there's periods of no work. And those periods of no work are just hellacious in terms of self-reflection. Am I still worthwhile when I'm not out there working? Because so much of my self-worth has been attached to what I do externally. But when I can get past that through prayer, through daily mass, through whatever, then there's a sense of peace that comes, but it feels foreign. Mm-hmm. Because it's not normally, for me, a period of long period of time where I slow down. I'll fill it up with something.
Mm-hmm. But there can be a kind of feeling of peace, yeah. The receptivity of just being present and appreciating the things that are there in being, so to speak.
But it doesn't last for long, generally speaking. I'd say it's like a toe in the water right now of what it feel like someday when I'm retired. But I don't feel I'm there yet. But there's still days when that absolutely fits for helping me do the self-reflection that I need to continue to grow.
I remember one of the threes on a panel that I had once that... And any of the types can get depression, you know, if it's not common, really common for threes. But this woman was saying, I had this huge depression. It went on and on. I didn't think I'd ever get out of it. It was like terrible. It was deep. It was the most horrible thing. And you know, like, how long did it last? And she said, well, for the whole weekend.
Yeah, that would be a low spell.
It would be a real low spell.
Yeah.
Tony, what about this realm of feelings? And when you awaken and you do slow, does sadness too come up about things?
It's interesting. I'm in religious life in the Catholic Church, and one of the practices that have developed the last couple years, and I think it links very well with this Enneagram work, is contemplative prayer. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of just actually sitting before God in silence, stillness, and not doing anything, just being. And that practice or the discipline itself has been very rewarding and very helpful in terms of getting in touch with, what is going on inside. You know, and at times, yes, some deep sadness, some deep loneliness, you know, a deep sense of who am I?
Right.
And who am I in relation to the higher power? You know, for me, that's God. And but that discipline itself really invited me and to struggle with that and to get in touch with and to embrace and to integrate what that feels like with, you know, with the Enneagram practice as well.
I'd really like to echo that the sadness that I have experienced has absolutely been transformative. We go in action, and it was an incredible cue that something was really important, and then to move into action about it, but some really significant action for me. Like, I found my work, I changed my work. I left a very large law firm to really do work with people and conflict transformation. It's developed over the years. It's been enormously significant, like taking risks like that, mm-hmm. because of sitting with feelings for just a little bit of time to know that there's something very important here.
So this is, in a way, part of the whole path of development. I want to ask you all about that. But I do want to come back to what will set you off. What will get your personal reactivity going?
Inefficiency.
Inefficiency, yes.
Having
yes.
a schedule lined out that you just can't follow. You know, something gets in the way.
Something gets in the way, an obstacle to obtaining the goal and the achievement. And what will... if I'm the one that's in the way, what will I experience?
The wrath of Rosie.
The wrath of Rosie.
Depends on how close you are in relationship to me.
Yeah.
Because if you are not in close relationship, or if you were, you know, a publisher, or if you were even a colleague in my office, you would not experience my wrath or what it feels like for me on the inside. You would if you're in my household, and that's where the Enneagram is.
What if I'm not this really important? What would I experience then if I'm not this really close person?
It's almost this, if you're not the really close person.
Yeah.
It's just grit my teeth and
just
do it.
Just keep going. Me aside and get out of the way.
Right. Uh-huh. Well, and actually, it's not as abrupt as that. It has, for me at least, it still comes with warmth. It's just kind of it's almost a placating, actually. Mm-hmm. Fine, sure, I get it, but I'm going to move on with the way I think is the best way.
Uh-huh. How does the saying go? A rose by any other name is still a rose.
Steel magnolia is what I like to say.
What'll set you off, Tony?
Yeah, I think I mentioned the inefficiency piece, when a certain goal is out there, and I might believe that goal is part of a larger picture, and I'm doing all that I can to work towards that goal, and others are not seeing that vision or taking those steps or not walking the walk, as I like to say. So that is disturbing at times. But the piece of, yes, the image and how I confront someone else on that, or how I would deal with that reality is a challenge, because then what's the image that other people would perceive me, or how would others react to my response to that?
That's a really important thing, the whole thing of having a good image in what you're doing and accomplishing.
It really is, because I don't think as threes that we are always just driving, and if something gets in our way, no matter what, we're going to do it. That's actually not the way it is always for me, because if something's getting in my way and it's actually giving me some feedback that's meaningful for me, I want to be very flexible and totally readjust to be able to meet that expectation. If it's values-based, however, for me, and I need to just separate myself and walk the walk and go out on a limb, then I will. But the other kinds of pieces in terms of work that I may not have approved of, I probably will take their word almost at face value and readjust, make the revision, or do what have you.
Right. So I want to just, before we go to our question period on the program, ask you all about what helps your development, your personal development, return to that, and and how can others support this?
I think I just come back to what we're lost to, and that's the hope. And I think whether it's in relationships or in work or in commitments we make, for me at least, it's the idea that there is some hope involved in who I am and who I'm around and what I'm committed to, and that through Enneagram practice, through other disciplines, that's there, but I just have to be open and receptive to that so that I can continue to carry that message.
There is hope outside of yourself, that there's a greater universal hope there. In the Christian tradition, it would be through God, and some other tradition, it may be some other vehicle, but that... that it's not all dependent upon me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
And allowing that in, which can create a certain amount of doubt initially, which you don't want to have. Healthy doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Healthy doubt.
Right.
I think in terms of self-development, for myself, it's about what I do for self, what I change about me, and then what I would ask others whom I care about and are close to me to also help me with. So kind of like that self and other perspective. And so the self is to really develop the inner observer about my reactivity. And when I feel sort of, for me, what I call like the clinch, and I feel like that my stomach just go, to be able to just breathe into that and thus to not react on that note, but to place it with something else. Prayer is just significantly important to me on a daily basis. And I've been blessed with a long marriage and a wonderful husband who affirms, loves me for me. And so when my children remind me of that, and if my friends reach out to me because I haven't reached out to them, unless it's in crisis, I'm amazing in crisis, but just on a regular, let's go to the movies or what have you, I'm not the one initiating that. So if they do that, there's also a real kind of connection
right.
that slows me down that's really helpful.
Right. I think, you know, from, you know, I've got threes in my life, my own daughter. It's one of the things I feel is important is to let her know how much I appreciate all that she accomplishes, but that I care about her, not what she gets accomplished and what she does,
yes.
although I appreciate that, but for her loving sweetness, for her just being her.
Exactly.
And that helps our emotional bond, and it, you know, brings her, you know, more back into being centered, for example.
Yes.
And you're, well, Rosie, what would you say here about?
I would say taking the time for self, and that can be through prayer, daily mass, contemplative prayer, like Tony mentioned. But it can also be learning. As I learn more about, say, for instance, Enneagram or any instrument, there's a tendency for a three to bounce it against self. We can be self-referencing like a four in a lot of ways. And that's where, for me, a lot of the self-reflection comes in about how do I help myself become better around tensions that I create or tensions that I experience. But it's really taking the time for self, and not always alone. It can be through a group workshop or something like that that allows me time to go inside as well. I don't necessarily have anybody in my life who will validate me the way you so beautifully validate your daughter for being and not doing. So that's something I will look for, I think, in my life, because I think that, too, can be see really the whole rounded self, not just the doing self.
I want to just comment that the for all of us, this path of development is getting more self-aware, more self-observant as you're speaking, so that we're not so trapped, we're not such a prisoner, we're not such a hostage to our particular habit of mind, that we can loosen its grip upon ourselves, kind of get out of the box, or at least make the box larger, ourselves more whole, more complete, and return also to the more spiritual, higher qualities of ourselves.
Yes, exactly. And then our relationships, too,
right.
with God and, you know, and then also with other,
right.
without having to be so just loosening that right. grip that it has on
right.
us.
Well, I want to turn to our audience and see what questions we have. And if you'd...
I have a question for Louise.
If you'd say your name, your first name.
My name is Susan Roberts, or Susan. And I have a question for Louise. With a family of five and a husband and all, what have you shared with them about the Enneagram? Have they asked about it? Are they curious about it? The effects it's had on you and your family?
Yes, I have definitely shared it with them. Just recently, my daughter, our oldest daughter, who's 14, and a friend and I were meeting the boys to go skiing in February, and I was asking them if they were interested in this and if they'd want a typing session on our three-hour car drive. And so did a typing with her friend to see what my daughter think about it as a way of inviting her in, because I think now 14 on the cusp of being 15. It was just a wonderful time, and it was remarkable how it resonated for them, and then was our discussion for the rest of the evening and the next day. My husband has known of my work. I've been working with the Enneagram for about 7 or 8 years now, and he's been very much aware of it, and I'm trying to draw him in to go work with me on one of these panels or come. And our family, we're both self-preservationists, is our barrier in the sense, I mean, it's a wonderful barrier, but someone needs to take care of the household while I'm away or while he's away, etc. But it has begun to infiltrate in a way that our conflicts are less sharp, our compassion towards each other is really deepened, our physical and emotional and spiritual life is really deepened. And that can be attributed to just one person changing herself and the impact that it can have. And then he's a wonderful person anyway. But it's been shared in those respects.
I love your example here of, like, you bring this to your teenage daughter and to your older children, which is a whole other issue. Like, when is it appropriate to do? Certainly in teenage years it's fine. But it's like multitasking, because you're driving, getting to the ski, but you're also accomplishing bringing the Enneagram to your daughter all at the same time. You know, maybe several other things, too.
Right. Heaven forbid time be wasted.
Right. So, yes, and your name.
Hi, my name is Trish, and I want to thank each of you for being so open and candid about your type. It helps me understand. I've got two threes in my life, my brother and, man, I've been in relationship with for a year and a half. And when I listen to you talk and I think about my brother, I'm wondering, he seems to be so engaged in getting things done that it's particularly difficult to get him to spend time with the family. And do you have any suggestions for how we might engage him?
One of the things I thought of immediately is to give him a task to do within a family function that would allow him to feel good on the three side, probably the doing side, but then orchestrate some time for being within that doing task. Might be a way to fool him into coming, if you will, by making him feel valued, but then taking the time that you need on the being side with him.
I think Rose's point about, too, of making him feel valued, I think it's important, especially as a three, even a male as well, to hearing how you would feel about that. You know, what's it like to want to spend time, you know, with your brother, you know, who might be very active? You know, for me, at least hearing that from, say, my sister, that would at least invite me to then be honest about what's going on inside of me. You know, because as a three, that's a difficulty. You know, we struggle with being honest with others and with ourselves, and so hearing somebody doing that with us, especially a sister, at least for me, I think would be an invitation to take that step.
I'd really, one thing that has been part of my own self-development is, and to answer your question, is being transparent. And so I think that threes don't have it on, the expression kind of goes on the screen, on the radar screen, that we're not involved in relationships. Relationships are so important to us, but we're busy in task. So when others are suffering from our not being with them to develop relationships, it's not, it is totally new information for us. So the notion of being transparent, to share that in a loving way, I think would be enough. It certainly would be for me. And it would probably be with feeling like I had about 100 daggers in my heart. And, but I would definitely be changing my ways. And, something else is, I don't know how my colleagues here feel, but my husband has this incredible knack that when I've sort of strayed, a hug, and I'm just like all the way back again in relationship. And, of course, he's my husband, but I think if my brother, sister, any of them were to do that, it's a real kind of physical groundedness. You're back in this picture again. We need you. We love you.
You can get him more interested in the Enneagram. The way you can do that is like, make it a task. Make it a worthy task. Make it something that would be important to you, so that it's a task that gets accomplished that's going to benefit. Threes want to benefit the people around them.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And that'll support it, too. If Tony, if you could respond to that, and then we're going to have a little, I'm going to bring closure because our time is running out for the show.
Yeah. I think to piggyback a little bit with Rosie said, for myself, in a similar way, you know, kind of prior to some of this work, I was diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis. It's an autoimmune disease. And here I was, very active all the way through college and afterwards, you know, with triathlons and marathons. And there was that sense of worth and accomplishment. And all of a sudden, here I was, not even able to get out of bed in the morning, you know. And so I really didn't have a choice. You know, I was almost thrown into this type of work of dealing with what does it now mean to just be. And that's been a challenging process, our road so far. But I think what's happened is really kind of being pushed. You know, lifestyle has almost pushed me into this sort of opportunity to really look at, all right, what does it mean to be, and how do I integrate that in terms of who I am as a whole person?
Right. So the incapacity is like a huge wake-up call. That you can't just go ahead and achieve. There has to be something more in your life. That's a great example. Well, I need to bring some closure here. I want to say just a little bit to kind of the refresher of like what you've done is shared with us so well, this basic proposition that love and recognition and approval come from what you do and what you accomplish. And believing that so much keeps you so focused on tasks and goals that kind of lose touch with your own deeper feelings, with the love really comes from being and from the connection of heart to heart, so to speak, and that the path that you've been working brings these elements in. It doesn't negate it. It's not the fallacy of the opposite alternative. It doesn't negate any of the really good and the accomplishment, but it helps bring in the balance. And your own work of personal development has shown that to us really well. And then lastly, I just mentioned that the Enneagram doesn't depend upon any particular spiritual or religious path, or any race, or any religion, or any particular ethnicity, or any country. I mean, the Enneagram is so basic, so fundamental, the way we're organized, that it's in all the cultures, that it's in all the differences amongst us. And I've had the opportunity to teach in such diverse places as Brazil and Finland and Australia, and still the Enneagram and all the types are there, despite these big cultural differences. And we've had people come from all over the world in all the great traditions that have benefited from understanding the Enneagram. And next week on our program, we'll be moving on to one of the other heart types, type 2, the giver. And I hope you all tune in again for that show. And thank you very much for your participation today, Rosie, Louise, and Tony.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Empower Your Life with the Enneagram. Join us every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for another informative hour of Empower Your Life with the Enneagram, right here on the network truly dedicated to your health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What is this wonderful and effective self-help system known as the Enneagram? The Enneagram tells us why we feel, think, and behave the way we do. And most importantly, it tells us how to become our best self in all domains of life. We introduce to you the Trifold School of Enneagram Studies. Our training program has the highest standards in its field, with remarkable records of trained, skilled teachers. The Trifold School of Enneagram Studies includes a professional training program, business training, consulting, classes in the integration of psychology and spiritual life. For more information about our products, training, and classes, go online to www.AuthenticEnneagram.com or call 1-866-366-8973. Empower your life today with the Enneagram.